This is going to be a little fast-paced presentation because I'm trying to go over all everything necessary about AIRMOS methodology. So I'm going to focus on how we use the radar signal to retrieve root zone soil moisture for AIRMOS. It was motivated by the importance of soil moisture, which is a key variable that links processes between the Earth and the atmosphere and has many applications in many fields, including flood control, energy, geotechnical engineering, human health, as some examples. For example, soil moisture stays key to the partitioning of precipitation into either infiltration, the one part that goes into the earth, or the one that turns out to be runoff. So it is important, important factor for flood control study. Another application for the weather and climate prediction softwares that we use. So soil moisture is used as initial condition for in those softwares. These are some very quick applications for soil moisture. And the importance of soil moisture, as we know, motivated a few missions, either by ESA, which was the SMOS mission, or two missions by NASA. Technically, one was a mission, the other one was a project. SMAP, you're all familiar with, and AIRMOS, which is technically a project, and I'm going to focus on the last one mentioned here, which is AIRMOS, Airborne Microwave Observatory of Subsurface, Subcanopy, and Subsurface. So what it basically does, the ultimate mission of AIRMOS was to improve the estimate of NEE, net ecosystem exchange, by improving the estimate of root zone soil moisture. So it had several steps. The very first step was to use radar observations to estimate root zone soil moisture. And then the rest was left to hydrologists, that they used root zone soil moisture estimates and linked it, related it to estimates of carbon exchange between the Earth and the atmosphere on the continental level in North America. This is a very brief schematic of what basically AIRMOS does. So we start from here, we collect AIRMOS data, which means the radar data, and we retrieve root zone soil moisture. This is the focus of this presentation today. And then, because these are snapshots, the flights are not continuous. They happen every other along some campaigns, which are usually three-day campaigns. And so we use assimilation techniques. Hydrologists use assimilation techniques to interpolate temporally between between the times of the flights at a 100-meter scale, and then they upscale that into 1 kilometer, and at the very end, they estimate NEE in the North American, Canada, and the United States. So, again, the focus of the talk is this part, collect AIRMOS data and retrieve root zone soil moisture. AIRMOS flew a synthetic aperture radar in P-band, which for this specific project was about 435 megahertz over 9 sites in the United States and Canada and La Selva and Mexico also. I'll show those sites in the next slide. And these flights covered areas of about 100 kilometer by 25 kilometers. So the radar swath was about 100 kilometer by 25 kilometer. Those sites, all of them almost included Fluxnet towers, so we could have some in-situ soil moisture measurements in order to validate the root zone soil moisture retrievals. These are the sites that AIRMOS covered. We have 9 different biomes representative of the major North American biomes. In different regions. The first one in Canada, which is Berms site in Canada in Saskatchewan. Number 2 is in Harvard Howland Forest. The other one is in Duke Forest, North Carolina. Biome number 4 is, I believe, is Metolia site in Oregon. Number 5 is in is Moist in Oklahoma. The other one, which is in this state, Arizona, in Walnut Gulch watershed. And then we have one in California in near Sacramento called Tunzi Ranch. And then we have 2 more biomes, one in Mexico and one in Costa Rica. We splitted the sites into two groups. Our team at USC took care of five, and another team did exactly the same thing with the other four sites at JPL. So the results that I'm presenting today are the ones that we processed at USC. So to understand what we have to model in order to get information about soil moisture, we need to know what the radar signal path is. This is for a bare surface. For a bare surface with no vegetation, we might have different soil layers with some inhomogeneity inside. For air mass, we assume that each layer was homogeneous, so there was no rocks, for example. And if there are vegetation, the radar path would change. There would be interaction between the vegetation, between the trunk and the ground, and the different layers that are present there. This is basically the mechanisms, the scattering mechanisms that the radar model for air mass considered. Backscattering of the radar signal from the canopy. There are three different mechanisms that involve ground and direct backscattering from the trunk. And then the model that is described in this paper, which is based on a much older model by Durden at JPL, then all these powers are added together incoherently, and the total power is considered to be the radar signal. As I said, there was a model already existing from a few years ago, but we had to include a multi-layer soil in order to be able to retrieve soil moisture information from root zone area. So we developed the model further, and the mechanisms that involved ground scattering had to be developed to include a multi-layer soil. The very first one was the mechanism that involved double bounces from the ground. So double bounce from trunk, ground, and to the radar, and the other one double bounce from the canopy, ground, to the radar. We used an approximation called Kirchhoff approximation. The solution already existed for one-layer soil. We extended that into n-layer soil for our application. The other mechanism that involves ground is a direct backscattering from the ground. Of course, it is attenuated going through the canopy. And the method that we use is called the small perturbation method. Again, it existed for a single-layer soil. We extended that to an n-layer soil and incorporated that to Steve Durden's model. So now we have the capability of simulating radar signal, but now we need to retrieve information, which in this case it roots on soil moisture. So this is the inverse model, that the general model for the inversion. The input would be the radar signal, which is of course contaminated by some noise, and the parameters that are known parameters are basically everything. We assume we know everything about the area except for soil moisture data. Frequency observation angle, the list continues here, and I will mention what those parameters are, and at the end the soil moisture parameters. And to retrieve the soil moisture, we use a global optimization method called simulated annealing, and we define a cost function, of course, based on the difference between the simulated radar data and the observed radar data at the given frequency and the given observation angle. But to know how to model a soil moisture, because we might have different layers of soil, we do not have the ability to consider all those layers soil moisture as unknown, because the problem will be extremely ill-posed. So what we did, we observed that this in-situ soil moisture data from all the installed probes could be approximated mathematically with a second-order polynomial. Of course, it's not a physics-based model. It's not based on Richard's equation that you are all know better about than me. We used a mathematical approximation for the soil moisture, and we observed that using a second-order polynomial would be good enough for us to approximate root zone soil moisture. So two examples, one from Tanzi Ranch in January and the other one from Moist in Oklahoma from 2012 in September. And this is another comparison between the different fits into soil moisture comparison of linear fit, quadratic fit, and exponential fit, and it shows, for example, for this specific site, Metolius, that along this period of time, quadratic approximation or quadratic fit to the root zone soil moisture would result in a smaller RMSE. It would confirm that our choice is a good choice for retrieving soil moisture. So this is the ultimate schematic of the problem. We have layered soil on top of which we have vegetation, and then we assume that soil moisture data, which is the volumetric soil moisture, can be modeled with second order polynomial. In this case, we would estimate A, B, and C. After you have A, B, and C, you can have soil moisture at any depth you want, of course, up to a certain depth, which is the depends on the number of modeled layers in the electromagnetic model. These are the data layers that we used for each pixel to characterize the pixel in order to be able to calculate the backscattering coefficient or the radar signal. Radar data, which was, of course, provided by JPL, it included incidence angle and slope of the ground, which was based on the digital elevation map, SRTM. And then the land cover type was necessary for us to know what kind of vegetation. Is it evergreen or is it deciduous? And also a slope mask was provided by NLCD for pixels which have a slope of more than 10 degrees. We would exclude those because our Ford model does not consider sloped ground. And then soil moisture information, we use Sergo database in order to have the number of actual soil layers, thickness of the layers, and the percentage of sand, silt, clay, bulk density. This was used along with some model which is Peplinski's model to convert volumetric soil moisture content into dielectric constant, and from there we can calculate backscattering coefficient. And then because there are so many pixels in each swath and computational resources were limited, we had to segmentize each radar swath into several segments. In some cases, it could be up to 1,300 segments, and each segment was run separately on a node. We usually use the NASA facility at Ames Research Center, but also USC has some high computation facility which we used in case we needed to run more sites at the same time. But this was our main computational resource for ERMAS project. This is a sample soil moisture map retrieval from Tanzi Ranch from 2015. This is the surface soil moisture, the soil moisture at 10 centimeter, 30 centimeter, and 45 centimeter. We originally started to retrieve soil moisture up to 1 meter, but then based on some analysis that I'm going to talk about in a moment, we reduced that validated depth from 1 meter to 50 centimeter. And this is the validation pixel. At each site, we have one or two or at most three installed probes at different depths against which we can validate the retrieval results and assess the errors. This is another way of showing the retrieved results based on the in-situ soil moisture probes. So, for example, in Tanzi Ranch, we have installed probes at three different locations. The blue ones are the actual soil moisture data, and the dashed plot is the retrieved soil moisture, which is, of course, a second-order polynomial. And these are the retrieved RMSEs, which should be at the end less than 5%, not individually, but at the very end of the mission, all the probes at every site together should be less than should produce a less than 5% RMSE. I just want to show the procedure that we took to improve the error, to decrease the error throughout the ERMAS mission. The flights started in 2012, they ended in 2015, so we continued to improve the errors, and I'm going to present some of the measures that we took to do that. So one of the things that we changed was the threshold or sensing depth. The other one was the dynamic range of unknowns, which was originally fixed, but then we changed it based on in-situ data. Bias removal, which is, of course, it has to be done specifically because of the possible calibration errors in radar data. And then some are attributed to data, not necessarily to the forward or inverse model, like reprocessing the radar data with recalibrated data and the location of the probes. And of course, probe behavior and accuracy, which is an obvious thing because sometimes the installed probes malbehave and we cannot rely on those data, so we just exclude those in calculating the ultimate error. To calculate the threshold sensing depth, we started with 1 meter, but it was just a wild guess at the beginning. But then we wanted to simulate the threshold depth and see if the threshold depth that we considered at the beginning, which was 1 meter, is consistent with reality. So what we did for each site, based on the actual parameters of the site, we simulated the backscattering radar data, but we put a PEC in the simulation, which is the perfect electric conductor at the very bottom of the pixel. This will reflect everything from the signal. So we started to change the depth of the PEC, and then we looked at the backscattering signal of the radar, and we wanted to see after what point we do not observe any oscillation larger than half a dB. Half a dB is the calibration accuracy of the AIRMAS radar. So this is, for example, one observation from Metolius grassland. So this is grass. All the parameters fed into the forward model is based on the grass parameters. And when you increase D, or distance, from the top, you see at this point, almost at this point, the value of the oscillation start to be smaller than half a dB. So we can say, okay, for Metolius grassland, 50 centimeter could be a good sensing depth. So we did the same thing for all sites of AIRMAS, and we concluded that 50 centimeter is a good one, is a good threshold depth for AIRMAS retrieval. So we reduced 1 meter to 50 centimeter after 2013. The other measure we took, originally we started assigning some lower bound and upper bound to A, B, and C, very large bounds, but then we wanted to see if they are really, those bounds really make sense. So we looked at the in-situ soil moisture data. For example, here, for moist throughout the year, we fitted a quadratic function to soil moisture data, and we looked at A, B, and C of the real soil moisture data, and these are the dynamic range of A, B, and C. These are the actual flight dates, so we look at the flight dates with an episode after with an interval that include the flight dates. And then we assign an upper bound and lower bound of A, B, and C based on those observations. So originally, as I said, we started with 100 meter, but if you fit the quadratic function into the first 50 centimeter, the dynamic range of A, B, and C could change as you see in the next plot. So this is the same site, but instead of fitting quadratic function into the first 100 centimeter of soil moisture, we started to fit those quadratic function into the first 50 centimeter. And as you see, the dynamic range would change, so do the upper bounds and lower bounds of A, B, and C. And that also changed the retrieval of the soil moisture, and of course, we expected that would improve the error and the uncertainty. The other thing that we did was the bias removal based on the actual retrieval. So these are all the, for example, all the retrieved points estimated versus measured for Tanziran 2015. And then we removed the bias because at each site, at each year, radar could have behaved differently because of the calibration inaccuracies and other things that would contribute to the bias. So we calculated the RMSE based on a removed bias version of the data. And the bias was removed for each year separately and for each site separately. So, for example, here the RMSE before bias removal is about 8.8%. after you remove the bias is about 4.6%, which is meeting the error mask requirement. This is an example of how the accuracy would improve if you recalibrate radar data. JPL started to reprocess some of the radar data according to their knowledge of when the radar started to probably behave badly, and then that would affect the calibration. And as you see, for example, in Tanzi Ranch, the green, the red ones are before calibration, the black ones are after new calibration, and it shows that the RMSE has improved. So for any site for which we had access to newly calibrated data, we did that. We did reprocess the data and deliver the data based on that. This is everything from USC sites, Berms, Metolius, Moist, Tanzi Ranch, and Walnut Gulch. And it is color-coded based on the different sites. And the total RMSE you will see in the next slide, which is smaller than 5%. This is based on error as a function of depth. The very first 5 centimeter, 4.1. The first 15 centimeter, 4.3. The first 25 centimeter, 4.5. This is the requirement for the error mask mission. So it is required that for the first 25 centimeter RMSE be smaller than 5%, which is, but of course this is only for USC sites, but if you look at the total RMSE for all of the sites together, it is still around 4.9. And this is for the first 45 centimeter. There is an error mask page at Oak Ridge National Lab. They have all the data, all the product of error mask, including roots and soil moisture, and all the other products that are level 4 products, and you can download it from there. And just some very quick summary of the error mask. We had about 1,200 flights. 1,200 flight hours since January 2012. The last flight was on September 29th of 2015, and the delivery of the roots and soil moisture product started in April 2013. And we met the mission requirement for the first 25 centimeter. The RMSE had to be smaller than 5%, and it is. And some quick acknowledgement of all the people who helped throughout the error mask mission. Well, thank you very much.
We have time for a question.
I noticed that the individual sites didn't correlate all that well with, the shape of the curve correlated well with the soil moisture and depth, but there was quite a separation.
Are you looking at the, are you talking about the scattered plot or this one?
I'm talking about this plot right here, mm-hmm. where you had quite a difference in the soil moisture between what was measured and what was tested in the air
mask. This one is before bias removal. The scattered plot is after bias removal. And the part of the bias could be due to the behavior of in-situ soil moisture. So when you remove the bias, it could take care of some of the huge differences between. Although there, I do not see any huge difference here, there could be some huge differences in some of the cases, but removing the bias would take care of that.
Well, in some sources, like in, for an irrigation system, that kind of difference on the left would be the difference between, between a stressful soil moisture and if you estimate you've got more than enough soil moisture. So it would be, from an irrigation standpoint, that would be way too much variability, way too much error.
6%. Are you talking about
the 6% in soil moisture terms could be the difference between stress and nutrition. So that would, I'm just trying to get a handle on it. If you said you remove bias and you get better than that?
When you remove bias, yes. I mean, each individual probe at each individual date could result in a larger than 5% error. But when you put everything together from the entire 4 years and from all sites, this would be the result of the RMSC calculation, which is after bias removal, of course. It could be, yes. It could be. No problem.
Thanks, Larissa.
Thank you.